Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and wherever you are, I hope the sun is shining. I know it's shining with my guest because she's on the big island in Hawaii, Etzkona. That's where she is, and she always has the sun shining there. And of course, if it's not shining where you are, you can be jealous. It's all right. My guest today is Julie Steelman. Her book is called The Effortless Yes. It's all about selling. And this is about taking the mystery out of selling. And I think you will really enjoy her approach. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's fabulous to be here. And aloha to everybody.
Aloha to you. Those trade winds are blowing, and it's probably, what, about in the 80s?
Always.
Always in the 80s. Oh, gee whiz. Oh, well, it gives us all something that's, here in the Pacific Northwest, the sun decided to finally grace us, and oh, my heavens, we are so grateful. We're practically giddy because we've had nothing but gray. So having been in the islands, I know how beautiful it is, and it's just a joy. Now, you've been there for 4 years, Julie. I want
yes,
my
I
audience
have.
To know a little bit about you. You generated over $100 million in sales. You worked for some pretty big companies like Apple, Microsoft, Universal Studies, Honda, Nissan, Sony, PlayStation. Now, with that level of sales, obviously you were able to enjoy a great deal of abundance, and you now have retired at your young age, which is wonderful. But this was not always the case with you. You had to really come into your own as a salesperson. Now, what do you say to someone and say, well, you're just a natural salesperson? I mean, my goodness, you sold $100 million. It's a piece of cake. You've got it down pat. How would you respond to someone like that who really feels like they're totally inept themselves and they hear your story and they go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so let's just dispel that myth right now. There really isn't anybody that gives birth onto the planet that has this chip with the most incredible selling prowess already filled up, and it's in their DNA. I actually don't believe that that's true. I think some people are more comfortable than others in conversations and relationships, but I think everybody has the ability to be influential and to educate, and everybody has a strength in that area about their way of communicating that gets through to people, and everybody has their pitfalls that they have to work through. And it's really the ability, what I would say to everybody who thinks that and says that is, if you have ever enrolled your friend, a spouse, a sibling, or a parent in going to see the movie you wanted to see, that, my friend, was a sale. or go to the restaurant you wanted to go to.
or getting the husband to watch the Martha Stewart or the Paula Deen
Oprah
show. Yeah, into
yes.
that, and you're saying, oh, please. I said, well,
yes.
it's just
yep.
get the television back when I leave the room. So here you go. I agree with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody has a natural ability to be influential. It's really about communication. And as soon as you marry up communication or being in a relationship with somebody with money, people get squirrely about it. And that's where some of that ickiness comes in, because our role models for being a buyer and the way we've been treated from salespeople hasn't been a good experience.
That is very true. And I've known some absolutely wonderful salespeople, and the ones that I've enjoyed have been the ones that are sincere. I hate the hucksters. I really do. I hate those individuals, and maybe it's because as a mature woman, I've been around the block a few times, but there's always that little part inside the person that says, gee, I wonder if this is really as good as it sounds. And so many times if you stand back and you go, well, I don't know. I think I better not do it. You're glad later because somebody's really been pressuring you. And that's really not what you want to do. But people will say, Donna, there's times when you're selling chocolate chip cookies and there's other times you're selling diapers for babies. Now, there's a difference in these products. Is there really?
I actually think if there's a need or a desire and what you have fulfills that need or desire, it's not different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the baby poop versus, you know, wanting a savory bite, mm-hmm. those can have increasingly equal desires going on at the same time, frankly.
That's a very good way of putting it. Okay.
Thank you for that example. That's great. But, you know, at the end of the day, what you talked about is so right on because it's not about pressure. It's never about force, and it's certainly not about coercion. And that's what is so interesting to me is people that don't have any of those words in their personality or their DNA, as soon as it comes to selling, all of a sudden they're afraid of being that persona. And I'm like, you know, that's all tactics and scripts and manipulation, and it's all been thought out. And you're, if you haven't been trained how to do that, you're not going to do that. So that's one easy way for me to say you can go ahead and relax and exhale now because you're not mm-hmm. going to do that. But, you know, it's about providing value to a customer. It's about finding out where the need or the desire is, and who knows better than you how what you offer fulfills that need or desire. And guess what? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you're not a match. Then both go your separate ways and you've saved time. That's mm-hmm. great. Move on. But if what you offer can somehow help someone else get more of what they want or less of what they want, depending, then, you know, you kind of have a responsibility to share that opportunity with them, or you're, in fact, withholding that opportunity from them. And that's why I think that mastering this ability and even becoming 10% better at it than you are right now is going to make a really big difference in your business, in your life, in how you communicate with people, because it's actually a very sacred relationship between a buyer and a seller. And that hasn't been handled that way in a lot of scenarios that happen in American purchasing scenarios, especially car buying is one that always comes up. And they're in the back room because the boss told them, do this hard sell and then mm-hmm. do the, I don't know if my boss will go for that price, but I'll go try for you. I'm on your side. They go through those double doors and they leave you sit there for 45 minutes. Guess what? They're drinking coffee, having a cigarette, laughing with the boys, and they come back and you're emotionally distraught. Oh, my God, I'm not going to get the car. I'm not going to get the price. And then you want to get out of there because you've already been in there for 3 hours. And so what did they just do? They invisibly negotiated with you, and you lost all your moxie because you're tired of waiting. And so when they go, well, I couldn't get you that price, but I could get you $5 off. I don't mm-hmm. know. I think that's the best I can do. At that point, they've broken you down, and you're like, I'll take it because I want to get the heck out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like that's not what this is about at all. And that's a tactic.
Very true.
That's not what this is about.
And
it's about,
like,
do you... Sorry, go ahead.
Excuse me for interrupting you. What I liked about one of the first points that you bring out about sales, and there may be some salespeople listening saying, I don't know if this is going to work for me, but I'll tell you what, I think from my own experience, it's most effective that you've got to sell with your heart. If you don't believe mm-hmm. in what you're selling, it's going to come across. I'm telling you, I've seen that so many times with people, and the difference is night and day. When someone can say, look, this is what I'm offering. This is what I want to bring to you. If it's a fit, wonderful. If not, I'm going to be like Santa Claus in The Miracle on 34th Street. I'm going to tell you to go to Macy's, or I'm going to tell you to go down to Ding Dong Gyms over here because they may be able to help you better than I can. I really loved that lesson in The Miracle on 34th Street. I thought, this is something that every salesperson should really be aware of, because people remember when you have done something for them mm-hmm. when typically they don't get it. So selling with heart is very important. What was your first lesson that you can recall that made you aware of that aspect?
This is, you're asking me to go way back. Oh, my God. Well, you know, I think I had a lot of lessons of it because I needed to keep getting it in, like, doses. But one of the first lessons I remember was I was working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car when I first got out of college, and it was like, ugh. But I was writing up a contract for this guy, and Enterprise was the kind that you went and picked up the customer. There was a lot of corporate customers, and you went and picked mm-hmm. them up and that kind of stuff. So there's this guy standing in front of me, briefcase suit, nice gentleman, but he wants to get on with his day. And I remember the manager standing in the corner and him giving me the look of, you better ask for the upsell and you better close the deal because we're going to be talking about your numbers as soon as he walks out the door kind of look. And I was like, oh, great, here we go. And I asked him, you know, do you want the damage waiver? It makes your life easier, la, la, la. And I just kind of did the script. I didn't really believe in it, but I asked because I felt like I was being watched. That was my reason for asking, not because I thought it provided value to him, but because I was being watched. And he's like, no, I don't get why you want all that extra money. This is stupid. I'm totally insured, and I'm insured under my business, blah, blah, blah. Can I just have the car now? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So he walks out the door, and I came in, and my manager approached me, and I said, I can't talk to you right now. And I ran to the bathroom, and I threw up.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back out, and he's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, that didn't feel good. I don't like it. I don't think this job is for me. And he goes, come into my office. I want to talk to you. And I thought he was going to fire me. And he's like, let me tell you why. This is really important. And then he explained to me all the benefits of having the damage waiver. You saw a guy, he's in a hurry. It reduces hassle. It reduces time. He doesn't have to talk to his insurance company. He doesn't have to pay his deductible. He doesn't have to fill out a report for his company. He listed all these things. And I realized that not explaining it to this guy in a way where I believed that the value was there actually withheld information for him to make his best informed decision. And that's when I realized that, you know, we say selling with heart, and people go, oh, here they go, getting woo-woo on us. Mm-hmm. And it's not really about that. It's not about being woo-woo. It's about being genuine, and it's about telling the truth, and it's about expressing what you have to offer in a way that gives the other party their best advantage of making a decision that is in alignment with what they're really truly looking to do. If you withhold any of that belief that you have or any of that enthusiasm that you have or any of that information from them, you withhold their, you actually impede their ability to make the best decision. And that's why I think that's being very service-oriented and very heartfelt.
How do you stay out of the negative self-talk rabbit hole? That's what you put in your book, and I love that. I could just see the rabbit hole and standing right in the middle of it. How do you stay out of it?
You know, you keep your focus on the value. You keep, and it's really easy to go down that rabbit hole because you'll try and try and try and nothing will happen. You know, there's so many ways to, it's about keeping the faith. And it's about believing in that moment when there's no evidence for it that what you have to offer is worth you going one more step, is worth one more conversation, is worth one more asking for the business. It's like you cannot be derailed by that you haven't broken through yet or you haven't made the sale yet. Get creative. Think of something else. But see, in my world, I never believed no existed. What I believed was there's a misunderstanding or they'd get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always operated from that, but I always operated from they just don't get the value or they'd say yes because I know this is the right solution for them. And I kept my eye on what problem I wanted to help them solve, and I kept trying different ways to paint the picture without being aggressive or pushy, but trying to, look, I'm really enthusiastic. I'm not trying to push your buttons. I actually think this is the right solution for you, and let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
And just being honest about it, but keep your focus on the value, the payoff, the benefit that the customer's going to get. That's how you stay out of the negative self-talk rabbit hole.
Now, you make a comment in your book, and anyone that's made $100 million in sales definitely knows what they're talking about. You say people spend money with individuals they respect, like, and trust,
mm-hmm.
which is why putting yourself and your content out there is vitally important. You minimize your efforts and maximize your rewards. There are situations that I think any of us can think of where we have come to know and trust someone. And I think of an individual that my husband and I knew at a local bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we had worked with this person, hadn't done anything, hadn't gotten any loans. His name was Bob. He was a wonderful, wonderful bank manager. And he got to know us. It was important for him to know the people that came into his bank. And he went out of his way, and there was this congeniality. And there came the day, finally, when we needed to have a loan. Actually, there were two loans. He said, I'm happy to oblige. We didn't consider going anywhere else because we had this relationship with this man. And
yes.
I think any of us, whether it is a groomer or if, you know, it's anybody in any situation that you've done business with that have proven to themselves. I think of a guy that I know, he'd only buy his vehicles from a particular auto dealership, and this was for used cars. And he said what really sold him is, one, his father-in-law had always purchased from this guy, but he had purchased a brand new vehicle to him, and on the freeway, the vehicle suddenly died. He had his cell phone, he calls up the guy, he said, you know something? This car that I've had for only 2 weeks died on the freeway. The guy said, you stay right there, I'll send out a tow truck, you come back, you get another vehicle. And he stood behind everything that his dealership represented. And this young man told me, he said, I understand why my father-in-law wants to work with him. So, you know, you have these situations. And I think that that is extremely important, developing relationships with people.
Mm-hmm. You raise a really good point, and especially, you know, people ask me all the time, how do I economic proof my business? And that's how you economic proof your business. And it's been said, and I'm trying to look up who it is that said no, like, and trust, because that gets used a lot. And I can't remember who said it. Wasn't me that said it, but I like to take that whole idea to the next level and add respect in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing of it is, people do business with people whom they know, like, and trust. Why? Because at the end of the day, they know that that person has their back and will look out for their best interests.
Mm-hmm.
That's really how you translate the meaning of that. And in a society where we're getting a lot of very negative, not enough money messages, and our government isn't role modeling great money habits, and people are feeling unsure about sources of income they've always trusted before,
mm-hmm.
people are very skeptical. And as they should be, actually. I think it's time, and I'm glad, actually. I'm actually glad a lot of the things are coming to light that have needed to come to light for a long time. And at the end of the day, someone wants to do business with someone who they know has their back. You have to have a good product. You have to be able to paint the picture about the value that that product offers. But you have to back it up as someone who is a person of character, who is genuine, and who will make any wrongs right. That's what people are buying now in a very skeptical consumer society where the messages are all saying there's a lot less money than we all thought we had. You better inhale and hold your breath. The way to economic proof your business is to be that resource that people know, like, and trust and respect. And that means that you always have their back and you will always make a wrong right. That's what people will lay down money for and pay for, especially at a time like this. And that's a reputation that I built and used, and I got into doors to people that didn't give access to anybody because
mm-hmm.
of it. And word gets out, you know?
Yes, it does. Yes,
and
it
as
does.
Soon as you say, this is my banker, I've known him for years, I trust him implicitly, I'm going to give you his card, that person doesn't want to do any more research.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That is absolutely true. And it's something that I think has been a part of the human condition forever.
Whether I agree.
The caveman that's saying, hey, this guy's mm-hmm. got good rocks over there. Go pick out those rocks and bring them back over here. I mean, it's okay.
Yes.
It's all right. Now, you talk about every individual having what you describe as a zone of genius. Describe
mm-hmm.
that.
I have to qualify that and say I call it a sweet spot because it's a little bit different. Gay Hendricks is the one who cloned or created the phrase zone of genius in his book, The Big Leap, which I highly recommend to everybody. It's more of a self-help book, but I actually think it's one of the best business books ever written, and I tease him about that all the time. But it's that thing that you do, the thing that your company does, that thing that you're known for. There's a way that you do what you do, and it's the thing you love most about your business, and it's the thing that really creates a transformative experience or moment for your customer. And the more you can dial into what that is and be articulate about it, the stronger a sales story you'll have and the easier it will be to say, well, you know, what we do best is. And it's a very inherent, intrinsic thing. If you have a company of people, then it's typically something that all of you agree is what you do best. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, it might not be the what, but it might be the how. It might be that you might have a law firm and there's 80 other law firms just like what you do, but you guys offer service at a level none of your competitors do. You have to know what that distinction is because, number one, it gives you a significant competitive advantage. Number two, it gives you an unparalleled level of confidence to be able to say to a customer what we do best is, and you know it's true and you mean it and it comes off as genuine. And number three, it usually reveals a very lucrative niche that only you can serve, and that's what you want to find out. And it's something that takes a little bit of work to dig into. Some people, it's very obvious what it is. They know what it is. A lot of times you can get the information about your sweet spot or your zone of genius based on what your customers, if there's constant, consistent feedback about something, that's very likely pointing you to what this thing is that you should be talking the most about. Gay's description of your zone of genius is defined by that which you most love to do above all else. Mm-hmm. So if you can answer what that question is relative to your business, then you'll have found what your zone of genius is. And I say take that zone of genius and translate it into business terms, and that becomes your sweet spot.
You make a statement in your book, you just never know when your biggest customer may be standing right
in front of you. Yep.
And, boy, I'll share a quick story. I have a very dear friend. We were discussing sales and ethics and this type of thing one day. She's a very successful realtor. And she said one of her most powerful lessons was when she was first starting in the business. She had only been in it for a couple of years, and the attitude of most of the people that she was working with is sort of like the car salesman, high pressure, this type of thing, and it just didn't sit well with her. One day, this man walks into the office, and he's there, and he's in grubbies. He looks like something the dog's brought in, and she goes, yes, sir, and nobody in the office wanted to have anything to do with this guy. He did not look like something out of Beverly Hills. He looked like something out of the local quartz mining section down the street. So she said, I'll be happy to help you. And he said, okay, I want you to drive me around. I want to see, my wife's interested in certain things, and I just want to find out about this, that, or the other. So she took him by some commercial buildings. And so she's telling him about the buildings and what's going on and what's happening with them. And he said, well, what about XYZ? And she's giving him all the information. He said, I'll go home, I'll tell my wife. She said, well, that was an interesting experience because she'd spent like 3 hours with this guy driving him all over the city of Los Angeles. So she then goes back to the office. Next day, this gorgeous woman walks in, dressed to the nines. So she asks for her. And Lorelai said, hello. And, of course, Lorelai was very excited about the whole thing. She said, woohoo, I got someone here. Maybe this is a person who's going to be interested in what I have to do. Well, this woman said, you spoke to my husband yesterday. And she said, huh? It was her husband that looked like the quartz guy. Well,
yep.
They were worth millions.
Mm-hmm.
She had been busy in some meetings doing some things. She couldn't take the time, so he did. And because Lorelai treated him so well, was so good at her explanation, the wife comes in the next day. She sold a building for like $5 million.
And wow.
Okay, my way is not a bad way. And that is the way she did business after that. the very thing that you're talking about. She came from her center. She gave information. She always wanted to find out what that customer wanted, what was most important to that customer. And then she said, all right, let me tell you what I'm aware of at this time, and she'd go out. But she had, with this couple, she did business with them more than once. So I just want to share that story.
I love this story, and I think we've all gotten tripped up where we've accidentally misjudged someone, and it's kind of been embarrassing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's human nature to think that what we see with our eyes is telling us the truth about somebody, and when we judge or assess people like that, and it's very easy to do, and we do it all the time, I think the thing to remember is that you just don't know who's in front of you and what they need, and it's just way too soon to judge people. And if we do, we're actually not coming from the best place of service. We're playing in our small self. I'll give you another example of this because I think it really illustrates the point. I was going car shopping, and I this is a long time ago, and my boyfriend at the time was with me, and we walk into the Nissan dealer, and of course, you know, great used car or classic car sales story. The guy walks up, oh, hi, want some coffee? Here's a brownie, blah. You know how they are. They kind of like gush over you, and you're like, oh, here we go. And, you know, he's like, so you two married, you know, getting into all that stuff. We're like, no, and we didn't give up a lot of information, and he starts talking to my boyfriend. He's like, so what kind of car are you looking for? Patting him on the back, totally ignoring me. And I'm walking behind my boyfriend a little bit, and I'm watching this whole thing go down. And at this time, I was still very much a live salesperson working at CBSSportsLane.com, and I go, this is really interesting. Let me see how this goes down, because this guy's got it all wrong. And he's like, you know, so were you looking for a truck today? Are you active? You know, do you need a car for your dates with the girlfriend? Like that kind of guy talk.
Oh, yeah.
And he went on and on and on. And finally, my boyfriend looked at him and he said, I think you've mistaken this situation. And the guy goes, what do you mean? Come on, dude. I got tons of vehicles for you. We got SUVs. We got sports cars. What do you need? And he looks like, I'm not the buyer. She is. And he looks at me and he's like, a guy could have shrunk 5 feet. He was totally deflated. And I shook his hand and I said, you know, hi, I'm Julie. I said, by the way, you probably don't care about this little tip I'm going to give you, but I've been in sales for a very long time. You should always know who your customer is and what they want long before you ever open your mouth. And it's been a real pleasure, and we'll see you later. And I walked out the door. And it's like, I might not have been his biggest customer, but he had it all wrong about who was carrying the purse and who had the money and who was making the buying decision. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff you do not want to get tripped up in. And I always say it this way, the bridge you most recently burned will be the next one you have to cross. So just don't burn any.
Gotcha. I know we're just about out of time here, but I want my listeners to know that you have got so many points in this book regarding sales types, and people can evaluate themselves to see where maybe they fit. You have information about the various types of personas that you might encounter. And, of course, the list is really ad infinitum, but there's certain basic things, just like what you've mentioned and what we've shared in our time together. I really think that you've done an outstanding job with this book, and I think whether someone is trying to put together a seminar, whether they're wanting to sell the next WYSIWYG for the computer industry, it doesn't make any difference because the rules are the same. And I really think that sales, I know I've had my battles with it through the years, but if you can be in your own comfort zone, you really will actually enjoy the process in ways that you would never have dreamed. And I think your book, The Effortless Yes, is really a very good read for anyone. Now, your website is juliesteelman.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, that's Julie, J-U-L-I-E, Steelman, S-T-E-E-L-M-A-N.com. You can find out more information about her. And let's face it, She has a little bit of wisdom under her belt of experience, $100 million worth of sales. Good person to know. Julie Steelman, thank you very much for being my guest today. And for those just listening, juliesteelman.com. Check it out. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, if you're a first-time listener, all I'm going to do is give you a reading on the air. Just call in, give me your first name or initial. After that, sit back, relax, and let me, again, light up your life with some insight. And then you're welcome to ask a question afterwards. So we've got 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow we are going to be talking about how you can build a business. We were talking about sales. Sales are an integral part of business. But we are also going to be talking tomorrow about a wonderful publication called School for Startups, Jim Beach. This is an entrepreneurial organization that likes to see people successful. So this is what we're going to discuss. In today's environment, so many people are deciding to go into business for themselves, maybe having partnerships with other individuals, whatever it might be, and it's well worth knowing the steps that you can explore. And then on Friday, yes, we're going to be talking with Tom Sawyer. He used to be the writer for Murder, She Wrote, with the delightful Angela Lansbury. And he is just an incredible person. He writes the best mysteries. And The 16th Man is the one that we're going to be discussing. He's a repeat guest on the show. He is just a dynamic man. And I wanted to start off the second section of the program today with some information about a man, actually sharing something that he said. Now, this is Bill Plotkin. He's been involved in psychology. He's a psychotherapist. He's done research in dreams, meditation, hypnosis, and biofeedback. He also likes rock music. He is a river runner, and he's a mountain bike racer. And he founded an institute called the Animas Valley Institute, and he founded that in 1980. And he has evolved into getting involved with nature-based programs, educational, experiential types of programs with the out-of-doors. And he had this to say. He said, during the 21st century, the most radical evolutionary adventure ever to unfold on Earth is underway as we learn to shift human culture from a suicidal, life-destroying element to a creative, eco-partnership worthy of both our extraordinary human potential and the Earth's dream for itself. We must invent or reinvent a life-sustaining culture by a descent into the mysteries of psyche and nature, thereby recovering our native mystical affiliation with the world. Revelatory experience available to everyone. The most potent seeds of cultural renaissance are the deeply imaginative ventures of those who have undergone this initiatory descent, mature artists and visionary leaders. They represent the future human that must now imagine and create for all earthly life. All of you listening are those visionaries and those creators. And it's important to understand that no matter where you are, what you're doing, you make a difference in life. So it pays to be open to new opportunities of change. Sometimes it comes around, we don't like it, but I'll tell you what, that change may be bringing you a blessing of untold benefit that you would never have imagined otherwise. So be true to yourself. We've got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, it's Adrienne L., and I'm calling from California.
Hi, Adrienne. And where in California? Northern California, Southern California?
I'm in Northern California in Palo Alto.
Oh, lovely area. Okay. Adrienne, I am watching you in my mind, and the first thing that is coming in the way of a picture is you're wanting to change your environment. You're wanting to change the scenery. And how it is being portrayed to me is you have a portrait, a picture up on the wall. You're saying this is not going to do anymore. And it looks like you've taken something that was of colored patterning or design, and you instead have put up something that's crisp, clean, and clear, and it's in black and white. So what this is telling me when I'm looking at this is that you are very thoughtfully evolving through some shifts and changes in your life. And you are deliberately choosing to go with a more concise, compact venue of application that's going to enable you to really keep in front of you what you want to see, what you want to look at, and the results you want to accomplish. I think this is marvelous. This requires a great deal of discipline, and I'm seeing you being able to do it. I'm also looking at something with you that I'm intrigued with, and that is you are going to be exploring some artistic ventures. You're going to be exploring, I shouldn't say ventures, I should say avenues. You are going to be exploring because you're wanting to find something that is going to enable you to develop a new level of mental discipline. And art is a wonderful way, just like music, to create that shift in the mind that allows us to become a clearer vehicle for information. I believe that your psychic abilities are beginning to show themselves in the unique application that they choose to express themselves through you, in the way that they choose to express themselves through you. So I'm really intrigued with this. So I want you to enjoy the journey. I don't want you to be too harsh, too self-critical. I want you to be alert, be awake, and just stick to the agenda because I think you're going to be doing a good job. What would you like to ask me today?
That's interesting what you said because I'm actually being forced into this concisiveness and this discipline. No choice, no act of my own. Ask you, had an event happen recently, my mother just passed away, and I'm in her home, and I am packing and making things, concise, because I have been living here helping her for the last 5 years, and this was, she struggled very hard to survive an operation, and she was trying to write on paper. They had a trach in her throat. She was trying to tell me something before she passed, and she couldn't speak, and she was too weak to write. And I need to know what she was trying to tell me. And if you can tune in any way to that message, it would be wonderful.
What's your mom's first name?
Maggie.
All right. What Maggie would have written on that piece of paper would have been, I love you, goodbye. She knew that she was not going to be able to come out of what she had experienced, that the trauma to the body was more than what she could handle. How old was your mom when she passed, dear?
She was a very young 83, and mm-hmm. she had an event. We tried to do a stent, and that created actually a heart attack.
Right.
We had to go to have the surgery, like, immediately. We had to decide, was she going to, you know, have the open heart, or was she going to try to ride out this heart attack and probably pass away from it? And she was doing very well at first, and then she crashed, and then she was doing well again, and it took 7 weeks, you know, to see that she just wasn't going to make it out. But
mm-hmm.
that they took her voice away. And she was not alert, but maybe 6 or 7 times during 7 weeks of trying to help her. She had a stare that just went nowhere. She wasn't looking at you, and I felt she had already left, and then she would become alert, and then she would go away again.
You're right. You are right. This is not unusual when people are getting ready to pass over. There is this awareness that they have of the other side. And I've known of people that will come back and even talk when they have this particular look. They'll talk about who they're seeing. But your mother couldn't say anything. And she was
right.
too weak to write. But she knew she wasn't going to stay. So there
okay.
were those on the other side that were around her. And she was aware of them intermittently. And that's, I really believe, what she would have said if she had written it out. That's just what I'm getting. I love you, goodbye.
Wow, cool. Thank you
she
so
knew.
Much.
She knew.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you something about your mom. And I know many times people will have a feeling of, gee whiz, what if I could have done this, that, or the other, and they'll agonize over it.
Yeah.
And what's very, very hard sometimes to recognize is that these physical chassis we have are eventually going to break down. And her physiological well-being had been compromised for a good 10 years. Well, she was a real trooper, and she knew that she was going to make it a little bit longer. So you were very fortunate to have her for 10 years, because if it hadn't been for certain things that had been done for her, actually 20 years ago, she wouldn't have made it to 83.
Mm-hmm.
Just because
and
of
it
what was
exactly
going on with the physical chassis.
Yeah. 20 years ago, she had an operation to unblock an artery, and she was given a reprieve at that time. You're exactly correct.
Mm-hmm. So if it hadn't have been for the technology, that sounds so cold when I say it, but I don't mean it that way. If it hadn't been for
mm-hmm.
that, she wouldn't have been here. So she had this wonderful opportunity to live another 20 years. Her tissue structure just wasn't strong enough. She was taking medication, something like Coumadin or anything like that, that weakens the tissue substantially. And it can actually cause them to just disintegrate under a surgeon's hands. But she put up a good fight, and she just finally, it's like, it's not worth it. I need to get another chassis.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. She was just too frail. She couldn't, they gave her every infection you can imagine in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she just
mm-hmm.
couldn't deal with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
and
know,
so
just broke
it,
down.
It's one of those things she just said, nope, it's okay. I'm ready to go. But that's, again, I will repeat what I feel with her message to you is, I love you, goodbye. But she's around
okay.
you all the time.
Well, I'm trying to communicate with her. I did pranic healing over her for the last 4 weeks. And she made improvement, you know, during the, some of those healings. We almost saved her twice. And that this is what's agonizing me, is the fact that, you know, I keep asking, why, you know, couldn't we pull this through, you know? And
no, hon. Remember, it's her right of choice, not your right, but her right.
Exactly.
And why would she, she had said to you more than once, she didn't want to be around if she couldn't enjoy life. She didn't want to be a vegetable.
Exactly, and she did say that.
So she's,
she didn't
had
want to be in a nursing home. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So I think many times we need to make it okay. And in our culture, for some reason, we seem to think that death is an enemy. It's not an enemy. It is not an enemy. We are all going to experience it. And I'm not saying you should go jump off a bridge. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about living life with a sense of enthusiasm and a zest and a quality. But there will come the time when the physical chassis, I'm sorry, it's going to have to go to the junk heap. It just isn't going to perform anymore, and you don't want to be kept alive on machines. And this is the person's right to do. So she made her exit. But you were with her, and I think that that is a tremendous gift.
Yeah, I was with her. I had to tell them to turn the machines off.
Mm-hmm. And that was a blessing. And she had been gone for a number of hours already. She was out of the body. So when you did that, you weren't really, your mother wasn't there. She was out. She was standing beside you. She was standing beside
you. I felt her in this. I actually felt her above me in the ceiling. It was very peculiar. I knew she wasn't in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see her standing beside you during the last hour.
In the last hour,
And I just think that she was very joyful, and she wants you to be at peace. And so as you're going through all of the things you're going through, talk to her. Just talk to her in your mind, and if you feel like crying, have a good cry. But have a sense of joy for your mom, too, because you wouldn't have wanted her to be encased in a physical vehicle that would have made her just agonizingly miserable. Wouldn't have wanted that for her. She did not want it.
No.
You wouldn't have wanted it.
No. Yeah, that's so right. That's so correct. Yeah. And I talk to her all the time. I mean, I have her chair pulled out and, you know, I just think that she's sitting in her chair here on occasion, so I chat with her all the time.
That's a wonderful
thing. So I have no issues. Yeah.
I appreciate your call, my dear.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to go on break, so you take care. Be good to yourself.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you so much.
You have a wonderful day now. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, well, you can give me a call if you like, 888-627-6008. And how about a little bit of information about Indiana Jones? Mm-hmm. And the movie. We'll be back in just a minute.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, And if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number for you to call into. Well, let's just take a couple of signs out of the zodiac and chat about if you're working with people and you happen to know what their sun sign is. It might give you an inside track on how to deal with them, how to interact with them. Well, what if your boss or those significant people around you, there may be one or two, that is a Gemini? We've covered Aries and Taurus. Now we're doing Gemini. Well, guess what? Anyone under the sign of Gemini can be absolutely sharp as a tack and also totally unpredictable. Now, they've got a good sense of humor. Geminis really don't like being bored. They like being active, and they love to talk. They love to communicate. Our interview today was all about sales. Gemini make good salespeople. And you have to remember, when you're dealing with someone with the sign of Gemini, they can flip their attitudes really, really fast. And they may take you off guard, because you may have this happy-go-lucky, witty person, and all of a sudden, pop, boom, they turn and flip and they go into some kind of an attitude and go, where did that come from? Are they bipolar? No, they're just a Gemini. So the best thing to remember is don't take things too personally. But one of the things you need to remember, Geminis enjoy being listened to. Also, they don't mind people asking questions. So if you feel like this person's thoughts zigzag all over the place, well, take notes, and what you can do is take care of the things that maybe are little minor items that usually they forget to do. All you have to do is run through that and say, guess what? I made notes on this, and what do you think about these things, that thing, and the other thing? Geminis will just love you. Now, Cancer. Those that are born under the sign of Cancer, you're going to have someone that's highly intuitive and very, very sensitive. Now, under the sign of the zodiac, the sign of Cancer usually means a very nurturing person, but they can be moody. If something just doesn't feel right, they can go off on that tangent. So they are going to be a very hard worker, and you need to remember that this is a person, if they have got a goal or an agenda, they're really going to give everything to it. They're going to give it their heart. And they really, really like to take care of the people that are around them. Now, they don't mind hearing about your problems, but they may not want to solve your problems for you. But they sometimes could be a good sounding board. And those under the sign of Cancer really want to have a connection with the people that they are working with. They just don't want to have it, gee, I go to work and I leave it and I go home. That's not what they want. They really want to have good relationships with the people around them. Also, I did not know that there's more self-made millionaires born in the sign of Cancer than any other sign. Uh-huh. Yep, that's what they say. Well, those are the two signs, and I'll share some more with you, but I wanted to, before we closed out the show today, one of my favorite movies is Raiders of the Lost Ark. It has been a movie, Indiana Jones. I actually like most of them, because I think to have put these together, it just took such imagination, such tremendous teamwork. I love the special effects. Well, a former guest of mine, whose name is Joe Garner, is a Hollywood guy, and he had some information on Raiders of the Lost Ark, which, by the way, can you believe it came out in 1981? That's right. And it's amazing because this movie, in a sense, according to Joe, was a tribute to the Republic serials of the 1930s and 40s. Now, I don't know what those were, but that was big-time radio storytelling. Well, the serials had a vintage poster of a dashing hero jumping from a horse to a truck. Now, George Lucas remember seeing this, and it was very important to him. He just absolutely loved it, and he loved the movies at the movie theater that had these adventuresome stories. So he actually, when he was quite young, had Indiana Jones already in his head. That's right. He had figured out he was going to be an archaeologist, a treasure hunter, but one that had values that were always being challenged. Well, guess what? That's what he ended up doing when he was an adult. How many times do we have things that we feel and we see when we're kids, and we don't realize that in some way it's going to materialize. Well, Dr. Henry Indiana Jones Jr. came to life in a really big way. Now, it was introduced to Steven Spielberg during a vacation when he and George Lucas were in Hawaii. And this was in 1977, the month of May. And interestingly enough, they were having this conversation about this new movie. And this was the time frame when Star Wars debuted. So they were just talking and talking and talking. And Lucas said, you know, I've got this idea. And Spielberg shared his. And Lucas said, I've got an even better one. And he laid out the whole Indiana Jones saga. Spielberg loved it. They were off to the races. And, well, they ended up making $5.5 billion worldwide in 1981. And who knows how much that movie has evolved and resulted in. But anyhow, there's so many other fun facts about this. I just absolutely love the show, but I wanted to share those few details with you. We're out of time. My goodness, it went by like the wind. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. If you have that independent soul, that independent spirit, recognize it belongs to you, not to anybody else. And tomorrow, we're going to have a chance to show you how you can have that entrepreneurial soul make a reality that can give you the financial independence and the personal satisfaction professionally that you've always wanted. Donna Sebo here. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.